This sermon was recorded at Christ Church Overland Park, a congregation that seeks to be a people fully alive in God's kingdom.
The Holy Gospel of our Lord Jesus Christ according to Luke. Glory to you, Christ. Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. They were talking with each other about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them. But they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" They stood still, their faces downcast. One of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed, before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. Then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said, but they did not see Jesus. He said to them, 'How foolish you are, and how slow to believe all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory?' And beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if they were going farther, but they urged him strongly, 'Stay with us, for it is nearly evening. The day is almost over.' So he went in to stay with them. When he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and began to give it to them. Then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and he disappeared from their sight. They asked each other, 'Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked to us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?' They got up and returned at once to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, 'It is true. The Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon.' Then the two told what had happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke the bread." The Gospel of the Lord.
Well, good morning. It's good to be here with you, continuing in this season of Easter. And today we're going to look at one of the most treasured stories in the New Testament, the story about the disciples who walk and talk with Jesus on the road to Emmaus. And we want to be taken in, we want to be drawn into this story so that we can learn about the risen Christ. And I want to suggest to you two things we see here about Jesus. One, Jesus is hidden. He's hidden. And two, Jesus is revealed. He's hidden, he's revealed. And so let's take a look at the first, you know, in the text he's hidden. Luke 24:16, but they were kept from recognizing him. That's interesting. They were kept from recognizing him. And so that indicates some sort of spiritual blindness plaguing Cleopas and his friend. By the way, Cleopas, we don't know exactly who he was, but many scholars believe that Cleopas is Jesus' uncle, Joseph's brother. We don't know for sure, but It's a strong possibility that that's who this is. So why couldn't they recognize Jesus, especially like if it's someone like his uncle? How does he not recognize him? It's an important question, you know, because it could be that Jesus is right around us and we can't see him. We don't notice him. We may be plagued by the same sort of spiritual blindness that plagues these two. And so I want to just suggest two things. We don't really know what this means, like they were kept from recognizing him. It doesn't tell us, but I want to suggest maybe two possibilities. First, the risen Jesus was hidden because he was so absolutely normal and ordinary. You know, one thing we need to consider is this. If you're going to make up a story about a hero, about a Messiah who was killed in a very vicious way and then is raised to a totally new dimension of life and immortality, would you make him so ordinary that he could literally walk down the road and no one would notice? No one would have any idea who this was? Probably not. And in fact, there's a document, an ancient document called the Gospel of Peter. It was written about 150 AD. It was rejected by the church fathers. They said it was not apostolic, written much later than the actual Gospels. And there were inconsistencies, and there are inconsistencies in the Gospel of Peter compared to the apostles' accounts of what happened. And one of the things that they didn't like about the Jesus that is written about in the actual Gospels, one of the things they wanted to change was that he was too ordinary after the resurrection. In the Gospel of Peter, he's described as having a head that extends up into the heavens. Well, whatever that means, I'm not quite sure. But the point is he's this mythical superhero type figure. Someone you would definitely notice. But the risen Lord who comes to them on the road is just another guy who at least at first seems to them to be kind of clueless. Like, hey, are you the only person around that doesn't know what's going on? It's not how they imagine the resurrected Jesus would be. And he's so ordinary, I think it presents a challenge. And how so, you know, I think the same idea is a challenge for us. You know, I always tell couples that I'm preparing for their marriage ceremony that they're going to have a few days in their marriage that are really incredible, the best days of their lives. They're going to have a few really dark days, some of the worst days. But the vast majority of the days are going to be nothing but ordinary. It's like getting up and having breakfast and, you know, getting ready for work and whatever, you know, just doing life together. And you have to learn to appreciate those days that you'll literally never, you won't remember anything from them. You have to learn to appreciate those days because that's the bulk of your marriage. That's the bulk of your life. And the same is true for our relationship with Jesus. There will be amazing times where we experience him in great power. And a lot of people want every day to be like that, but that's just not how it is. There will be some of those days. There's going to be some dark days, what we've long described as the dark night of the soul, where he seems like he's a million miles away. But most of our days with Jesus will just be ordinary. And if we can't see him in the ordinary, then we're going to miss an awful lot. Brother Lawrence is a 17th century monk, and he served as a cook at his monastery, and he ended up writing a famous book called The Practice of the Presence of God, and it's all about how he learned in the monastery to see Christ in the very ordinary circumstances of his life, like cooking, washing dishes. So I think perhaps they didn't recognize him because he seemed too ordinary. But also, they didn't recognize him perhaps because they didn't understand how deeply they needed to be redeemed. They didn't understand how deeply they needed to be redeemed. Verse 20 and 21, they crucified him. This is what they're saying to Jesus. Imagine that, you're Jesus. They're like, Yeah, they crucified him. Yeah, I'm aware. They crucified him, but we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. We had hoped he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. The crucifixion is the way that Jesus redeemed Israel. Redeem means to buy back and release from slavery. And Cleopas thought the only slavery that he needed to be released from was the Roman occupation. In other words, Cleopas thought he needed a Messiah who would set him and the nation free from their negative consequences, their negative circumstances. And if that happened, then everything would be fine. But Jesus came to release Cleopas and all of us from a much deeper bondage. And the Bible tells us that all of us, deep in our hearts, are slaves. We are all slaves to sin. But Cleopas didn't see that, and so he's mistakenly looking for a Messiah who will fix his circumstances, a Messiah who would set them free from these really terrible Roman occupiers. And I think many of us, and I've seen this a lot as a pastor, many of us can't see Jesus for the same reason. We're looking for a Messiah who will fix our circumstances, not a Messiah who is going to do a deep work in our hearts and souls. And let me tell you, there's a vast difference between the two. There is a vast difference between the two. We all want a Messiah who will stay focused on fixing our external problems. But we fail to understand that the true Messiah is first and foremost focused on redeeming and transforming our hearts. And he knows that if he can't deal effectively with, the slavery of our circumstances until he deals with the slavery of our hearts. Let me ask you, do you see the slavery of your heart? Do you see your deep need for redemption? I one time had a person tell me that their greatest sin, and this is, I'm not saying this to make light of it, I'm just saying that this is a problem. Their deepest sin was that they didn't write enough letters. So that dates it. It was a long time ago the person said that. It's like, what? You don't write enough letters? Like, oh, Lord, have mercy. No. You got bigger problems than that. And I hope that the Lord opens your eyes to them, because everybody else sees them, but you don't. Do you see your deep need for redemption, or do you simply want a Jesus who will fix your problems? If you're looking for that Jesus, I think he's going to be hidden to you. I don't think you're going to find him. Jesus is hidden, I think, because maybe he's so ordinary, but also because they didn't understand their deep need for redemption, that he could only bring about by actually dying on the cross. And so that's the first part. Jesus is hidden. Now let's think about Jesus is revealed. I believe that one reason Luke chose this story out of no doubt many he could have chosen is because Jesus is revealed in this story in ways that he can continue to be revealed now to us. Notice Jesus never says, "Hey, guys, Cleopas, it's me," you know? What does he do? And you have to think he did this very intentionally. You know, he wasn't just making this up. Like, he did it very intentionally. First, he opened the scriptures to them. Now, if you know anything about first century Jewish men, you know that they knew the scriptures, the Old Testament. They knew the scriptures. They had read the scriptures their entire lives. So what was Jesus doing? Well, it says, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures. So all the scriptures, all the Old Testament, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself. Oh. They had read the Bible, but never with that interpretive lens. That all of the scriptures, even all of the Old Testament, it's actually all about him. In every page, it somehow points to him. There's really two ways to read the Bible. You can read it in a moralistic way, or you can read it in a Christ-centered, grace-oriented gospel way. Now, for example, let's take the story of David and Goliath. You can read that story and conclude, you know, we should be like David. We shouldn't be afraid of our enemies because the bigger they are, the harder they fall. Or we can read the story of David, the youngest, the weakest son who slays the great giant, not with weapons of war, but with a slingshot. We can read that story as a picture of Christ who faces the greatest giants of all, sin and death, and defeats them in an even weaker way by dying on a cross. And so in that, through that lens, the story of David points us to the reality of God's salvation, that it comes not through strength, but through the weakness of Christ. Now, of course, in this story, David is a good example. He's a great example of faith and courage. And, you know, we absolutely should desire that in our lives. So I don't want to say that's not valid or important. It is. But David was also an adulterer and a murderer. So you better be careful which, you know, examples you follow. You know, and if you read the Bible only in a moralistic way, you just end up with this very long list of things that you should and shouldn't do. Again, not to say that there aren't things you should and shouldn't do. There are. But if you read the Bible in a Christ-centered gospel way, believing that it's all about him, then Jesus and what he has done for you is always your ultimate takeaway. And it makes all the difference in the world because it helps you to see Jesus. It's why when we were looking for a Bible reading plan, I was really drawn to The Bible in 1 Year with Nikki Gumbel. You know, I'm a big fan of that. Done it, I think I'm in my 7th consecutive year. And the reason I wanted to choose that one is because Nikki's commentary is so good. Because Nikki's commentary helps you to learn how to read the Bible in a Christ-centered, grace-oriented gospel way. He will, you know, they'll read some passage in the Old Testament, and you think, what in the world could this possibly have to do with Jesus? And he'll tell you. He helps connect those dots. So Jesus is revealed to Cleopas and his companions as the scriptures were opened to them so that they could see that the Messiah had to suffer these things and then enter his glory. If we want the risen Jesus to be revealed to us, then we need to read. We need to study the scriptures, and there's no shortcut around that. You have to do it. Let me say that again. There's no shortcut around that. You have to do it. And if you don't, you're just going to miss so much. So, read the scriptures. And then the second revealing act of Jesus came in the breaking of bread. The breaking of bread. He took bread, gave thanks, broke it, and began to give it to them. Does that sound familiar? Yeah, it does. If you read Luke 22, which, by the way, was the gospel reading for today, I read it this morning in the Bible in 1 Year, Luke chapter 22, the Last Supper, those words are almost exactly to the word what Jesus said at the Last Supper with the 12. And then he says it again at this meal with Cleopas and his friend. And at that moment, it was that moment that their eyes were opened and they saw Jesus. That's why I said this story, everything that's going on here is very intentional. Jesus knew what he was doing. He knew we'd be reading about this. The emphasis here is on the bread broken and given to them. You say, well, but these guys weren't at the Last Supper. They didn't hear Jesus' teaching about the broken bread and the poured wine. Well, it wasn't about, the story at Emmaus isn't about what happened a few days earlier. It's primarily about what was going to happen going forward. And the millions and millions of other meals like it that Jesus would share with his disciples, where he meets us and nourishes us in the broken bread and the poured wine. He feeds not our stomachs, but our hearts, gracing us with his presence at the table. That's what he did that day, and what he does forever when we gather around his table. The Scottish hymn writer James Montgomery puts it this way: be known to us in breaking bread, but do not then depart. Savior, abide with us and spread your table in our heart. The risen Jesus gives us his sustaining presence and the nourishment of our hearts in the broken bread and the poured wine, made to be for us his body and blood. And we come and we receive, we eat, and we can see Jesus. When we come in faith, remembering who he is and what he's done for us, he comes to us. He's present to us. We can see him. We can experience him so that we can share in his life and goodness. That's why we come to the table every week, and why Christians from the very beginning have been doing this week after week after week after week. We don't do it because we're Anglican. Anglicans do it because this is what Christians have always done. And today, it's so exciting because we are going to experience the other great sacrament that Christ has given us, the sacrament of baptism, where again, we're going to have an opportunity not only for Milo as he gets baptized, but for all of us to share in this experience and to have faith and confidence that Jesus is going to show up. He's going to be present in a very real and active way in Milo's life and in our lives as we participate in this baptism together in faith in the risen Lord. All right, you guys ready? Come on up.